Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to Who Wars, the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. This is episode 13. Unlucky 13, or lucky 13, I guess if you go into that kind of nonsense. I don't, so it's episode 13, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. And you know what? This week I sat down and thought to myself, gosh, there's a lot of really good podcasts out there. And in fact, there may be too many good podcasts out there. I never thought I'd actually say that. If you watch me on Twitter, or if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, or whatever it might be, you'll know that I'm really, really into podcasting, and I follow an awful lot of podcasts, a stupid amount of podcasts, and not just Star Wars or Doctor Who ones either. I've got a whole lot of interests. History podcasts, for example, take up a lot of my time as well during each week. And I got thinking to myself, you know, people throw podcasts out into the world, you know, each week or every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, whatever it might be. We do the same here. And they wait for feedback. They wait for people to say, hey, that was a good show, or that was an interesting segment, or, you know, hey, you inspired me to do this or do that, or you reminded me of my childhood, or, you know, there are a million things that people might say in response to something you might say on a podcast. But the feedback isn't always forthcoming. I guess I have to remind myself of this sometimes in my own life. There are times where a particular podcast I listen to might come out on a Thursday or a Friday, and I can't catch it on my Thursday or Friday commute to work. I have no time for it over the weekend because, well, I'm living my life and I'm doing things with my wife and I'm making this podcast and doing all kinds of weekend things. So it's sometimes the next Monday or Tuesday or even Wednesday before I listen to that particular podcast. So that might be 4 or 5, 6 days after it initially goes out that I finally listen to it and say, hey, that was a great podcast. I really appreciated XYZ about it. And while I know when I say that to podcast producers and creators, they're really appreciative and they think, oh, great, someone heard it and, you know, they like to hear what I said. I know that it's very late in the day, you know, because they might be coming up to their next episode by that stage. Or if they're a fortnightly one, maybe they're halfway through the process, of course. And it just gave me pause for thought that sometimes when I don't always hear feedback from you guys right away, it's not because you're not listening, it's because you're just listening at a later date. So whatever date you're listening to this, whether it's the day it goes out or whether it's a month later or a year later, why not drop me a line and tell me what you thought about this episode? That would be greatly appreciated. Also appreciated is if you have iTunes to drop us a review and a rating. The review can be just one line. I like Who Wars because blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that will still help us bump up the rankings and ratings there, help us be found by other fans. You've heard me say this in other podcasts, so I won't labour the point. We'd just really love for some of you to do that for us. It would be a great favour. All right, and speaking of podcasts, in recent episodes, I've been making it a bit of a habit to talk about a Star Wars and a Doctor Who podcast that I'm listening to and that I'm into. And here I want to talk about two again. One is Coffee with Kenobi. This is for the Star Wars fans, if the name didn't give it away. It's a couple of guys, Dan and Corey, and they put together this show. It's a really, really slick show. If you think of something else in the Star Wars podcasting landscape, like, say, Rebel Force Radio, which is so slick it could be real radio. And in fact, I think in some limited way, it does go out on the radio waves in the US to some degree. Well, Coffee with Kenobi is in the same vein. You know, they've got their intro music, their background music, the way they present. This could be another radio show in the vein of Rebel Force Radio. But that's not the only reason I listen to it. In fact, you'll tell that when I get to the next podcast I'm going to talk to. It's not just production that wins it for me. Here, I think we have two guys who present a very family-friendly kind of show. They don't go out of their way to sort of be reminding you of that all the time, but just in the language they use, the lack of swearing, you know, and just the way they present the whole thing, it's something that could be enjoyed by the whole family. For people who aren't into Episode 7 spoilers, they're kind of, you know, against that. They don't really talk about Episode 7 spoilers at all. and it's just a really, really pleasant show to listen to. They have all sorts of content coming out. They have their regular show, but then they also have all these little spin-offs and do interesting things, so you never quite know what's going to pop up in your feed next. In your podcast feed, and that's always quite a thrill. Now, the second podcast I'll talk about is a Doctor Who podcast, and this is the complete opposite of Coffee with Kenobi. This is what I like to call, and not just what I like to call, I think this is actually a fairly well-established term on the internet. It's two pals and a microphone podcasting. It's like they've stuck a microphone in the middle of the kitchen table, and two folks, one male, one female, just chat about Doctor Who. So the production values are low, and when I say low, I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just two people talking. I don't know if they have one microphone or two, but if you just picture one microphone, you'll get the kind of vibe it is. It's just a conversation that's been recorded. Nothing slick, nothing flash, but that's by design. It's you listening in on a conversation, and you know, you might agree with some of it, you might disagree with some of it. Also, unlike something like Coffee with Kenobi, here it's very, very sweary. It's very, very controversial. So if you know, you're offended by that kind of thing, maybe this won't be for you. But if you want to hear two people around a table chatting about Doctor Who, getting sweary, just saying whatever pops into their head, you might enjoy this. You might already listen to, you know, half a dozen podcasts like this. I don't know. If you don't, and you want to bring this one into your life, I recommend it. I quite enjoy the episodes I've listened to so far. And as I say, the complete opposite to Coffee with Kenobi. So that's me in the podcasting space in a nutshell. I go all over the place. You can be highly produced, super slick, sound like you're coming out of an FM radio somewhere, or you can just be in your kitchen with a microphone. As long as you're saying interesting stuff, I'm really into hearing what you have to say. And, you know, I hope I continue that way. I hope I never get like some people I've heard. I've told the story in the past. Do you recall me telling the story when I was on Twitter one day and I saw this person say, you know, I don't think I could listen to a podcast unless, you know, I was on it or one of my friends was on it. And I thought, what a pretentious bloody thing to say. Like, you know, and some of their friends were agreeing with them, like, yeah, yeah, right on. I'm thinking, what do you mean right on? That's like the most awful thing I've ever heard. It means any other podcast, unless they're on it or their friends are on it, they're not interested in. So they're not interested in podcasting. They're interested in some sort of vanity project for themselves and their friends. And, you know, well, okay, fair play to them. If that's what they like, that's what they like. But to me, that's not podcasting at all. That's just, you know, wanking into a microphone, if I can be so crude. You know, I'm all about grassroots podcasting. I know I've brought this up in past episodes, so don't worry, I won't belabor the point. But I'm all about the grassroots. I'm all about, you know, hearing what other people have to say, not caring whether it's slick or lo-fi. And if I hear good stuff, I want to promote it. I want to tell you about these other podcasts. I want to tell you about another podcast, and if you like it more than this one, you might go and listen to that one, you know, for the next year or two and never listen to us again. And you know what? That's fine. Because I would rather promote good stuff and have people find good stuff and think, well, that's cool, than, you know, just pretend that we live in a bubble and it's all about our show and our show only, or our show plus some friends. No, that's not how I operate. And thankfully, a lot of the podcasts I see out there, I think, have a similar mindset to what I'm enunciating here, even if they don't say it out loud like this. And I'm wondering, should I be saying this out loud? But what the hell? This is how I feel about podcasting. I hope you feel the same way too. And if you do, I think we'll get on tremendously. Alrighty, moving on. We had a segment last episode where a listener, Ryder Waldron, and Ryder contributes to Coffee with Kenobi, coincidentally, and also blogs for some other Star Wars sites. I think Cantina Cast might be one of them. Yes, it is, because I'm about to announce that. Don't mind me. Ryder posed us the question who we would be in Star Wars. Not necessarily our favourite characters, but which characters would we like to be, who, you know, maybe embodied us best, and so on. And myself and Lex and Kate all answered in a segment on our last show, or the show before last, actually. I'm forgetting that we had an Eric J interview midweek this week as well. Yes, the episode before last, we talked about what Star Wars characters we'd be, and that got some reaction from you folk out there. Anthony Gibbons tweeted me, and he said he'd be Zeb. If I was 11, I'd want to be him. Then he says an expletive, which I won't repeat, and he says, expletive, I want to be him anyway. So thanks, Anthony. Anthony's at AntoZ71 or Antoz71 on Twitter if you want to look him up. Ben Rush, who's written into us before, he's at Ben110173 on Twitter. He said, Chewie is my favourite, but the thing I would like to be is R2-D2 because of all the roles within the Star Wars universe, he has the most knowledge. And I guess that's true, because I think there's this vibe in Star Wars that while 3PO might have had his memory wiped at different times, R2 seems to have remembered everything. So R2 seems to know an awful lot across a long period of time, which would be very cool in the Star Wars universe. Ryder Waldron himself tweeted us and said that he'd like to be Luke Skywalker and pointed to a blog on the Cantina Cast website to explain why. So if you go over to www.thecantinacast.net, you'll find his blog, I'm sure. It's got the title Choose Your Destiny, and there in great detail Ryder explains why he'd be Luke Skywalker. So very cool, Ryder. We really, really liked answering that question last week. A couple of listeners have written in, obviously, and joined in the fun too, and that's just awesome. Grassroots podcasting, everyone. This is what it's all about, just getting together. No matter what podcast you contribute to or what website you might write for, you can mix with other folk, and Ryder's doing that, and I just love it. Thanks again, Ryder. All right, we're over the 10-minute mark already, and I'm highly conscious that we've got some great stuff to crack through in this episode. Lex will be looking at Forest of the Night in her own way, and you know, Lex poses a question in that review that I had not even thought of when I was watching In the Forest of the Night. Well done, Lex. I'll see if you guys can guess what the question might be. I won't say what it is here. And Kate reviews the Star Wars EU novel, or I guess it's a Legends novel now, The Crystal Star. Now, this is a novel that I know got panned in fandom. I read it when it first came out, whenever that was. Make me feel old, why don't you? It was just horribly panned, and I think Kate, in listening to the audiobook of it and having a flick through her hard copy of it, has come to realise why, but I won't spoil that review for you. You can go and have a listen to it in your own time later on. Alrighty, I think that's all we've got to say in the introduction. So without any further ado, let's get on to my top stories of the week. All right, and into my top stories of the week, I start with a couple of Episode 7 stories. One of them really isn't spoilery, the other one is quite spoilery, so I'll start with the non-spoilery one and give you time to flick forward if you're not into hearing the spoilery one. Take a look at the show notes and you'll see when each of these segments starts and ends. So, into the non-spoilery one. We've known, I guess, for a little while that Episode 7 is being shot on film. This is another throwback to, you know, the older Star Wars films. When you think of J.J. Abrams making this film with, you know, practical effects and real sets, he's also doing it on film. You know, Episode 7 and what comes after is going to be so different to the prequels in so many ways, and shooting on film is one of these things. Now, we have also known that a segment of the film was being shot with an IMAX camera, and just recently it seems that an image of this IMAX camera has finally come out, and it's definitely an IMAX film camera, not an IMAX digital camera. I think Michael Bay might have used IMAX digital cameras on bits of Transformers Age of Extinction. Not a film I've seen, not a film I even want to see, but I've read that in reports. And I found a quote, I think this is from Variety, of J.J. Abrams talking about the role of IMAX in filmmaking these days. And it runs, quote, "The benefits outweigh the headache of shooting on IMAX cameras," says Abrams, who used them for a single sequence in Star Wars. "The opportunity to have an action sequence for this movie done in IMAX's natural format was too delicious an idea to pass up. As a filmgoer, it's something I want to see." End quote. And you know what? I think that's J.J. Abrams in a nutshell when it comes to making Star Wars. We talk about, and we see other people talk about, George Lucas going into the prequels. This is something Steele Saunders will often say on the This Isn't the Pod podcast. He has never paid for a ticket to Star Wars. Therefore, he's never gone into Star Wars as the experience that we've had with it, if that makes any sense. And so his approach and his ways of thinking about Star Wars are just inherently different to someone who did grow up paying for tickets to Star Wars and going in and having the experience of a film goer and so on. And that's what JJ's talking about here with the IMAX thing. You know, as a film goer, this is something I want to see. And this is why, in general, I think JJ's going to bring something special to Episode 7, because as a film goer, he knows what makes Star Wars cool. So it's interesting in that respect, but also quite interesting as well with the whole scene being shot in IMAX. I think it's a scene out in the desert, so it might be a scene with... Well, I won't spoil that if you're not into spoilers. On to the more spoilery Episode 7 piece of this week, and please turn off if you're not into it. We had a look at possibly the Episode 7 villain. There was a leaked photo. Now, what constitutes a leaked photo these days, I'm not sure. Was it really leaked? Or, you know, was it deliberately leaked? Is it a bit of viral marketing dressed up as something, you know, ooh, secret and special and we shouldn't really have this when it really is something they want us to see? Who knows? Frankly, who knows? Even some of these websites that specialize in spoilers and they have their contacts, how do they know their contacts aren't really being fed information that the filmmakers want to get out there? Anyway, I digress. This villain is masked and in a cloak with a hood and looks very, very much like Revan in the Knights of the Old Republic video games, Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2, which came from BioWare. Very Revan-like. In fact, you know, if it wasn't getting so much play, I'd say, hey, someone's just done some fan art based on Revan and are trying to pass that off as the new villain. But apparently it is the new villain. And even more interesting, perhaps, than the look of the character is the fact they're holding a lightsaber, and the lightsaber has a crossguard. So it gives the effect of being like a broadsword or something along those lines. And this is in keeping maybe with the prequels having Darth Maul and the double-bladed lightsaber, something we'd never seen before, but which evoked, you know, like a staff, and staffs are very common weapons in martial arts. Here, this lightsaber we've never seen before evokes a broadsword, which of course we've seen many times in real life, but never as a lightsaber-style broadsword. So that's really cool. And of course, the broadsword is red, the blade is red, and the crossguard is red as well. Really interesting look. I think it could be quite cool. You know, despite looking like Revan, I'm into this. I'm all over Episode 7 at the moment. So yeah, very cool. Something else that's very, very cool are the original X-Wing and TIE Fighter games. And then, of course, we had X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. This is going back to the early 90s and then later on into the 90s. These were video games that I played like crazy back in the day, and over time have become well regarded as some of the best sci-fi space sims ever made, you know, sitting up there right alongside something like Wing Commander or so on. Later on, we had X-Wing Alliance, which did look better than the original X-Wing and TIE Fighter games. It had better textures and so on the ships, but I didn't think the story was as good. So, yeah, look, if you weren't around at the time, if you weren't alive at the time, I know there's people who probably weren't even born when I was playing this. These games, X-Wing and TIE Fighter, were just fantastic. And the news this week is that the website Good Old Games is going to get X-Wing and TIE Fighter, as well as a bunch of other LucasArts games. I think Sam and Max Hit the Road, Secret of Monkey Island, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, and the two Knights of the Old Republic games, which I actually mentioned a moment ago with regard to Revan. They're all coming to Good Old Games. And Good Old Games, if you've never bought a game on that website, is very cool because, as the name suggests, it's full of old PC games and some newer stuff as well, I've got to say. And with the older stuff in particular, they make sure that it will run on modern software. So if you've ever had the experience of having an old game, you know, at the back of your shelf, and then you pull it out and say, oh man, I'm going to play this, and then you try and play it on your modern PC, it might not work, or it might not work very well. And even if you try and run, say, Windows in emulator mode to emulate an earlier version of Windows, it still doesn't run quite right. Well, Good Old Games actually takes these old games and tweaks them so that they'll just run perfectly on your modern PC, which is awesome. And I also hear that with regard to X-Wing and TIE Fighter, they're updating the graphics to some degree as well. I'm sure it'll still look like an older game, but it is going to look a bit better than the original. So if you're into space sims, or if you've never played a space sim, and that's quite possible, because if I can digress here, space sims really went off the boil after X-Wing Alliance. There've been few and far between, and in fact, There's a game that's been crowdfunded to the tune of almost $50 million at present called Star Citizen. It's the biggest crowdfunding of anything ever. And it's being made by the man who originally made Wing Commander, Chris Roberts. And I think the interest in that game and Space Sims via that game is perhaps sending a message, hey, there are people out here who love Space Sims. They want to get into the cockpit of an X-Wing or a TIE Fighter or some sort of spaceship and, you know, fly around and, you know, have planets in the background and shoot lasers at other ships. And, you know, they're very, very into that. It doesn't always just have to be like World War II dogfighting. People love dogfighting and just the whole Space Sim genre in general. And I think, I'd like to think that's the reason behind this finally being released to Good Old Games, because truth be told, this could have been done 5 years ago. You know, X-Wing and TIE Fighter were old games 5 years ago. So why wasn't it done then? Could have been done then. I think stuff like Star Citizen might just be showing the market that there's an appetite for Space Sims, and I think that's awesome. I'll certainly be getting these games, because you know what? As well as being slightly updated in terms of the graphics, they're coming with the expansion packs as well as part of the overall package. So for not a lot of money, probably less than $10, I would imagine. I've not seen them for sale on the site yet. I'd say for less than $10, you'll be able to get, say, X-Wing and its expansion pack, and it will run on your PC, it will look great, and you can play through the story and fly an X-Wing and do all that cool stuff. Shoot down TIE Fighters. If you're a Star Wars fan, it's just the most awesome thing going. Do give it a good, hard look. Okay, we'll round out this week with some Doctor Who news, or at least some Doctor Who-related news. Matt Smith is going to appear in the new Terminator film. This is called Terminator Genesis, and Genesis is spelled wrong in the title of Terminator Genesis. I guess it's all trendy and so on. And Entertainment Weekly, I think it was, had some publicity shots from the movie. And I've just got to say, straight up, they looked ridiculous. Not just Matt Smith, but the whole thing. It looked like really, really bad cosplay. And you know what? It pains me to say this, and I don't think I even should be saying this, because I want to see how Matt Smith in particular moves and acts in this role. He's a great actor. I want to see if he's moving and acting in a way that doesn't make us think of the 11th Doctor or, you know, air quotes, Matt Smith. I want to see if he does something with it. But just looking at the images, and these images even contain the likes of Emilia Clarke, who you might know as, you know, Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones, and, you know, some well-known actors, it's really bizarre. If you've seen the pictures, you'll probably know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, just take my word for it. Putting Matt Smith in body armor and holding a rifle and all these different actors posing, it just doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right. It's just got this vibe about it, and I wonder if that's going to really hurt it. I mean, Terminator as a franchise has a very checkered sort of history. The first movie is fantastic, obviously. The second movie was quite good too. After that, it sort of goes all over the place with movies and a TV series and so on, and it just really never seems to have had a really firm hand on the tiller, if I can use that expression, to really just keep it on the up and up. And when you already have that sort of checkered past, and then you come out with these publicity photos that look like bad cosplay, and you've got the 11th Doctor looking just ridiculous in them, I'm really wondering how this is going to go. Apparently it had a big budget, you know, almost $200 million. And will it make that back? I hope it does, for the sake of the people involved. I don't wish ill on anyone, but I do just speculate how well this is going to go. Anyway, have you seen the pictures? Did you think Matt Smith looked ridiculous, or are you going to be first in line buying a ticket because you love Terminator and you love Matt Smith and you are really, really into it? I'm just not sure what to think. Anyway, they were my top stories of the week. If you have any feedback on these, or if you've seen some other stories you'd like to tell me about, let me know on Twitter or Facebook, email, whatever you like. The details are all in the closing credits of the show. Okay, and on to the Star Wars Rebels episode of the week. And this week it was called Rise of the Old Masters. And here to talk about it with me, as always, is my wife, Leo. Say hi, Leo.
Hello.
Oh, you didn't do your old joke.
No, it got old.
Oh, okay. Now, I want to start with the actual name of this episode, Rise of the Old Masters, because there was a Master Jedi in it, well, at least her spirit, that was Luminara Unduli. But it wasn't Masters, plural, and nor did they rise. So what a bizarre episode title.
Yeah, one of the masters that got mentioned was Yoda for a split second.
True, but was he rising anywhere either?
No, I didn't see anybody rising.
It's the kind of name, it's like, oh, what a cool sounding name, but it didn't actually mean anything as far as I could see.
It was very misleading.
Yeah. But, you know, starting back at the start of the episode, I think it was very cool to see Ezra training with Kanan. Did you like that?
I like that, yeah. It was kind of like watching Luke and old Ben and A New Hope.
Oh, absolutely. And particularly Luke and Yoda, when he was standing, doing that handstand on one hand, very reminiscent of, you know, being on Dagobah.
Right, yeah, that too. I guess I was thinking of more when Chopper was throwing the things at the lightsaber. That kind of reminded me of the little remote droid thing.
Oh, absolutely. But also in that scene, I was reminded of his fight with Vader on Bespin, where Vader's throwing stuff at him and Luke's just taking these wild swings at, you know, bits of metal and things. I think almost, you know, frame for frame, Ezra was mimicking some of those moves that Luke does on Bespin.
Yeah. He did seem to be channeling Luke a lot, but I think that's intentional.
Oh, yeah, without doubt. Now, onto the episode itself, I guess the whole premise is they're lured into a trap by the Inquisitor, and I know you had some things to say about the Inquisitor after the episode.
I don't know what to make of the Inquisitor. I think if anyone had been following the lead-up to Rebels, in terms of just fandom and stuff in general, we kept hearing the Inquisitor brought up, like, he was going to be this really cool character and stuff, and I kept waiting, like, when are we actually going to see him? And so we finally saw him, and he kind of just shows up out of nowhere, and it kind of killed the mood a little bit for me. I was expecting him to come out like a really big evil badass, and instead of just showing up at the door like, hello, here I am, here I have a lightsaber, let's fight. And that was kind of it.
Well, it's an interesting lightsaber, at least. It started off as a relatively normal saber, albeit it had sort of a hand guard, which was interesting. Then it became a double-bladed saber, a la Darth Maul. But then it started spinning around as well, so he sort of has a few tricks up his sleeve with that saber.
Yeah, they're always trying to make sabers fancier and shinier, aren't they? Like Ventress with her two sabers with the curved hilts and stuff. They try so hard to make each saber look unique and outlandish, right? Especially with the Sith sabers.
I'm just thinking too, when we talk about sabers, the lengthening of or the shortening of Kanan's saber when Ezra was using it, that was a funny moment.
That was pretty funny. That was well played.
Yeah, and the lengthening and shortening of sabers is something that popped up a lot in the EU from time to time. So there's something from the EU creeping in as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think there was actually a setting on sabers. I think it was you could adjust the height using the Force or something. But maybe it depended on the user.
Yeah, I can't recall, but I certainly remember the first time I heard about it was in, you know, some of the EU novels.
It makes sense, though, that you would want to adjust the height of a laser weapon.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think in one of the novels, I think where I first came across it, they were fighting and then the guy lengthened it at the last minute and, you know, surprise, you know, stabbed the other guy.
Seems like a very useful tactic.
I think so. Now, Luminara Unduli, were you a fan of hers in the prequel era?
I mean, I knew who she was, but I didn't have any sort of attachment to her at all. Maybe because I didn't watch a lot of Clone Wars. Wasn't she in that? Maybe.
You're asking the wrong person. I gave up on Clone Wars after not very long.
I think she might have shown up in some of the novels, like one of the young adult novels series about the Jedi and stuff, but other than that, I don't know much about her, to be honest.
Yeah, and it was interesting because when they got onto that space station, Kanan said he could sense her. I think what he was sensing was her Force essence, her spirit somehow, because she was certainly dead. She was mummified in the wall of her cell and being used as bait, I guess, to get other Jedi to come along to try to rescue her. But we were treated, I guess treated is the wrong word, but we do see her sort of walking towards Kanan and Ezra, but not really towards them. I've read online Dave Filoni explaining that's her last moments. That's her walking towards her execution. So that's a bit chilling. That's a bit dark for a kid's show.
Yes. Interesting to see that Disney's going in that direction.
Yeah, well, they do put the show out at, I don't know, 8 or 9 at night in the US, so it's strange. They're going for this kids' audience, they want the young kids in, but they play it late at night and they stick in lots of dark stuff. I'm not complaining, mind you, but it is interesting.
I think that would have been more interesting if that whole sequence had been explained better. Like, yes, you looked up some spoiler online, but the average person is probably watching that thinking, what the heck's going on here? Is she alive? Is she dead? How are they controlling her? Like, that just brought up so many questions.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, some people might think, okay, she's alive, she's walking towards them. Oh, she's in a trance. Now she's walked into the wall and killed herself. Or, you know, that's probably what you could read into it at a face value, maybe.
Or is she some sort of halfway blue glowy? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little confusing. But, looking at the episode overall, we got to see a bit more of Sabine and Hera in this episode. I guess you were happy to see them, because I know you've got a soft spot for Sabine.
Oh, yes. I love her term for her grenades as miracles. I rather enjoyed that.
And the scene where all those space creatures tried to mate with the little landing craft that Hera was piloting. Very funny.
Yes, yeah. At first, I thought they were, like, Minox or something, but they were too big for that. But I was a little confused by the little ship thing. Like, is that like an escape pod that can fly, or is it a stealth fighter?
I only know this because they've made a Lego toy of it. It has a name, and it sort of breaks away from the main ship, and it can be used as a little fighter or, you know, recon craft or something.
That's interesting, because the ship doesn't seem big enough to have another ship within it, but okay, sure. That is a very useful thing to have.
Yeah, well, I would have been confused by it too. Again, I've just seen the Lego toy, and in the Lego toy, Ezra is piloting it, so I don't know whether Ezra becomes a bit of a pilot in that little ship later on in the series. Maybe he does.
Maybe if he keeps following in Luke Skywalker's footsteps, it's only natural that he'd become a pilot too.
Well, exactly. But yeah, I think we got to see a lot of the characters in a fairly even sort of way. I mean, Chopper had some good moments, and Zeb had some good moments. They all sort of had something to do in this episode, which in the past two episodes, maybe they didn't.
Yeah, I did notice that. Well, that's true. They all had something to do, and they had a part to play instead of just saying, okay, I'll bugger off for the rest of this episode. See you guys at the end.
Yeah. Now, one thing I know both of us sort of commented on at the end, and maybe you want to talk about this now, is the episode length. The stories do seem to rocket along and maybe wrap up a little too quickly when they're a single episode.
Yeah, that episode was just over before I could get really into it. I don't know what else you can do with that much time, but they've got to do something other than, oh, look, we fell into a trap again. Now we've gotten out of the trap. Okay, end of episode. It just doesn't seem like enough quite yet.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll start to come into some two-part episodes or three-part episodes. I don't know if they'll call them story arcs or whatever, but I think they need to really flesh out some stories. I guess in the early days, they're happy just to do these little one-off things, but I'd like to see that change.
Yeah, well, that's probably why the Inquisitor's entrance was just so, surprise, I'm right here, like, no build-up, no exciting entrance, just turn around and here I am. That's going to grate on me a little bit. I was expecting something a bit more dramatic.
Yeah, I'm trying to cast my mind back to the first double episode. We might have seen the Inquisitor in a hologram or something.
Right, I'm not sure if we got a really good look at him, though.
Yeah, it's funny, it's only a few weeks back, but I can't remember already. We might have to go back and watch that. But certainly the first time he's running around and interacting and having a lightsaber duel anyway with Kanan.
Right.
All right, so looking at the episode as a whole, what do you think? What would you rate it? How would you compare it to what we've seen so far?
Well, there was definitely a lot more Jedi stuff, so it loses points for that. But all of the characters had something to do. They all had great lines. Finally got a better glimpse of Kanan, which I've been wanting to see for a while now. The relationship between Ezra and Kanan is developing, and that's good.
Can I jump in and say you had a comment on the final scene as well with Ezra and Kanan?
Oh, with the lightsaber, and where it looked like a father and son playing catch, but with a lightsaber and blocking rocks or whatever it was Kanan was throwing at him.
Yeah, I think that was very much what they were aiming for there.
Yeah. I liked that scene. That was very quaint.
Yeah, okay, so overall?
Maybe 6 or 7 out of 10.
Really? That's interesting. My favourite still remains the opening movie, probably because it was long enough to actually flesh out a story. But out of the single episodes so far, like Droids in Distress and Fight or Flight, and now this one, I like this one the most out of the single episodes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it didn't have any really negative points for me. It just didn't quite... It was just simply too short to do a whole lot.
Mm. So out of the single episodes so far, what, you think Fight or Flight's maybe the best, or Droids in Distress?
Probably not Droids in Distress. I don't know. They're all kind of about the same. Ask me that later.
Okay, well, as I said, for me, I think this is the best of the single episodes so far. Again, I'm confused by the name, because there were no Masters plural in it, nor did they rise, so I think that was maybe some writer just wanting to write an extravagant title. But other than that, I quite liked it. The infiltration of the base, the way they took out all the stormtroopers, very cool.
That's true, and I did like the way they infiltrated the prison and how they had to get out. And I think I even commented at the time that this reminds me of playing a Flashpoint in Tor, basically, is what the whole experience reminded me of.
Which is the multiplayer game Star Wars The Old Republic, for those of you who haven't played it.
Right, and a Flashpoint is like a 5-person dungeon, sort of, with a story to it.
Yeah, we certainly spent a lot of time in Tor before we all got bored of it, after about a month or two.
Or after we, quote-unquote, completed it, personal story. After that, there just wasn't much to do except the same instances, but I digress.
Yes, we could digress on that for hours and, you know, all those years of lead up to Tor and saying, hey guys, don't make it so at the end of the story, that's it. And yet, that's what happened.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, there are still some people playing it. I don't know what they do or how bored they must be to be doing that. But
there have been a few expansion packs since we stopped playing.
Yeah. Anyway, that probably is another story for another time.
Yes.
All right, then. Well, I'm looking forward to the next episode. You know, in the US, after the week's episode goes out, so after Rise of the Masters went out this week in the US, they put out the next week's episode on the Disney XD app. So when I'm on Twitter, people say, oh, yeah, Rise of the Masters played an hour ago. That was great. But now I've also watched, you know, blah, 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 whatever the next episode is. And it's great, too. And I'm thinking, oh, come on. Suddenly in Australia, we're 2 episodes behind until we catch up on Fridays on Foxtel.
Wasn't that typical, though?
I just don't get it, you know, to play the episode of the week rather than letting everyone enjoy and digest it, they're then throwing out another one for fans to get into. And of course, very passionate fans are going to watch it, but I just don't see the point. Why not just put one out and let people digest it and talk about that instead of pumping out 2 a week, essentially?
I don't know, I'm not really sure what the logic there is. Maybe they're just that eager to get people to stay hooked on it.
I don't know. I do know that ratings-wise, though, the show bounced back with this episode after, I think, Fight or Flight bounced down from, you know, they'd been sitting at around 1 million for Droids in Distress, and Fight or Flight jumped down to, like, 500,000. This one jumped back up to almost close to 1 million, so maybe that was just a blip on the radar. Hopefully that's the case, because sitting around 1 million viewers overnight in the US, that's pretty good.
Right. Maybe that's because this episode had more Jedi-ness, and most people, unlike me, enjoy that sort of thing.
So. maybe. All right, then. We'll tune in next Friday with the next episode of Star Wars Rebels and bring that to you in next Sunday's show. Until then, Leo, thanks very much from your studio down the hall.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Well, I'll see you in about 10 minutes, actually, but, you know.
Okay. Sure.
Hey, everyone. It's me again. I hope you've enjoyed hearing from the correspondents that have been added to the Who Wore show. One of the great things about being in a fandom like Star Wars is hearing from people with various thoughts or opinions. We all have this common bond, but new or different perspectives can really help to broaden our appreciation and make us love our fandom even more. Do you have something to say that you'd like other fans to hear, especially along the Star Wars side of things? Rob is still looking for people to join the Who Wars team. You don't need any podcasting experience, just a voice and a microphone. So if this is something that sounds interesting to you, drop Rob a line. You can reach him at hello@whowars.net.
Hey, so this past Doctor Who episode was a strange one. In the Forest of the Night, written by Frank Cottrell Boyce, was good. My first reaction watching it was, this is so cool! And it was. The forest and the special effects were amazing, and there were quite a few interesting lead-ins to the situation. I love that it was a field trip turned inside out. It started inside a museum and it ended up outside, where the world was actually more interesting than the field trip itself. It was like the Night in the Museum Ben Stiller movie, except the museum was outside and, you know, it wasn't actually at night. Actually, they got the time of day of this episode entirely wrong. The title of this episode is In the Forest of the Night. What night? And some other things were weird too. Like this girl Maeve, her condition is left completely unexplained. What is wrong with her? What is she hearing? Thoughts? And trees have thoughts? Like what exactly were those gold things? The little gold flecks? And something about like when their gravity is pulled down, you can visualize them? What? And her sister that happily reappears at the end. What is her association to the gold things? Does she also have a special condition? There is this whole backstory that they really, really should have gone into. The Doctor was remiss that he had ignored what Maeve was trying to tell him. A whole lot more than just what Maeve was trying to tell him was ignored. Maeve entirely was ignored. By the Doctor and the producers of this show. And that fact that London is a highly populated area was also ignored. Rob, you went into this last week a little bit, and that also was just going through my mind over and over as the episode progressed. It got, like, distracting. I was wondering, what happened to all the people? Are the trees eating people? But no. They just were somehow forgotten. Ignored. Again. There were things that characters were drawing a lot of attention to that actually turned out to be completely insignificant, which is annoying. Like, Ruby was drawing attention to a plant that had both flowers and nuts, suggesting that it was a peculiarity of some sort that was a clue as to what was going on. Oh, and then the Doctor's speech about a nut or a seed being a time machine. A tree is a time machine, he said, and he made a really big deal out of it. It was interesting, but it turned out to be kind of completely irrelevant. But I am being kind of overly harsh, because in reality, in real life, things like this pop up all the time. Like, you know, people looking around haunted houses, we come up with all these speculations as to what might be happening, and we'll point out anything that looks peculiar. I'm using the haunted house example because it's Halloween. So, I'm going to let all this kind of pass. There are worse things that could happen in an episode, definitely. I think. One thing I noticed in this episode, and it's something I've noticed before, I have to go back and pay attention to who directed what episodes and all that, but I came up with another example of this episode of how the filming has changed from the other Doctors. They do funky things with the camera and the perspectives of the shots we see. The perspectives, like when Maeve is introduced in this episode, I mean, when she actually says, my name is Maeve, you see her and she's looking right up at the camera and it's as if we're looking through the Doctor's eyes. And when he asks her, he just juts his finger out and we just see it pointing at Maeve. It's really different. We haven't seen that kind of viewing of filming in any of the previous Doctors, I don't think. It's much more funky, kind of modern way of viewing Doctor Who. And it represents how quirky this Doctor is, I think. So, this episode was good, as I said. I liked it. I thought it was funny. This was my favorite line.
Oh my god, Maeve's gone. Leave those in the forest. Mate's gonna die. Oh,
Remy, that's enough. Doctor.
We're gonna find them.
I love the overblown hysteria of this episode. In fact, it's a good representation of what this episode was overall, I think. It was funny, and it was highly exaggerated. Nothing really happened in this episode except for some pretty scenes, some epic reactions to jungle animals, and delicious romance. There was a huge, funny build-up, but it was all very misleading. So, I don't know, next episode looks huge. We'll see what happens. Till next week. Bye.
Well, one of the most fun things about this episode is it's a two-parter. So you get to do what Doctor Who used to do every week, which was have a cliffhanger.
Dark water, and it's very dark indeed.
It's two episodes that take us to the heart of the Doctor's struggles, meeting up with significant old enemies.
One of the perennial questions that faces all of us is what happens when we die? I hope it's a lot nicer than this.
It's a big, epic series finale.
Well, there you have it, cast and crew talking about today's episode of Doctor Who, Dark Water. It's an episode we've heard about for a long, long time. We've known it's coming for a long, long time. We've had a good peek at it for a long, long time. We saw pictures of Missy alongside the Doctor, alongside Cybermen, ages ago, months and months ago. So we've always had a good sense of what this episode was about, or so we thought, but thankfully this episode still had a lot of surprises to give up, which is nice. It's really great to go into an episode thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be the Doctor meeting Missy and there's Cybermen, you know, I think I've got a handle on it. But then within the first few minutes, Danny Pink is run over by a car and he's dead. Wow. And of course that leads us to Clara going a little nuts, Danny heading off into the afterlife or the nethersphere, the promised land, whatever you might want to call it, and setting up the whole episode. And of course, with regard to Clara going nuts, that whole confrontation with the Doctor at the volcano was really good. I've never heard this thing about the TARDIS having seven keys before. If that is a thing, I've totally missed it in my, you know, 35 odd years of fandom, but we'll put that aside. I thought that scene was great. Looking at it in the trailer, or at least the snippet of it that we got in the trailer, I did have this feeling at the back of my mind that maybe Clara wasn't herself, or this was happening in a dream, or it was somehow being taken out of context, like she was holding that key and saying, you know, you'll never get back in the TARDIS because it was some other threat, not her, but some other threat, and she was telling him, warning him perhaps about that. And of course, in the end, it turned out to be a sort of a dream sequence, quite cleverly done, and I did love in those scenes, particularly afterwards where the Doctor explained what had happened, that we have a Doctor in control. The companion's not running the show here. The Doctor's in control. The Doctor knew what she was up to. The Doctor was onto it. And the Doctor let it, you know, play its course, let it run out, had a good look at what Clara was thinking and how far she was prepared to go. And then he swings into action, even though she's been so horrible to him in so many ways. He is still going to help her because that's the kind of man he is. So, am I a good man? That question wasn't asked in this episode, but I think we can clearly see that this is a good man, and this really is the Doctor, no matter what people might have been thinking over the last 10 episodes or so. Clara then pilots the TARDIS to a mausoleum, and as an old-school fan, I started to get the vibe of Tomb of the Cybermen. This is nothing profound. I'm not pretending I'm breaking new ground by saying this by any means. But just knowing that it was a Cyberman story and seeing the way the skeletons were set up, you know, row after row after row, layer upon layer upon layer, it just looked like Tomb of the Cybermen, or maybe even Attack of the Cybermen, just the way the Cybermen will often be laid out in tombs in classic Doctor Who. So I got that vibe. I also got a vibe of Revelation of the Daleks. Now, if you're a newer fan and you're completely unfamiliar with the classic stuff, in Revelation of the Daleks, the Sixth Doctor and Perry land on a planet called Necros, and there's a funeral home there called Tranquil repose. And the whole concept, you know, this is a spoiler, but hey, what the heck. The whole concept is that Davros is there, you know, turning the people at Tranquil Repose into new Dalek mutants for his own Dalek army. And so, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so we're in sort of cyber tombs and the dead are perhaps being harvested to become Cybermen, but how? You know, Missy seemed to be the link, and when it was revealed that there was Time Lord technology involved, the mystery who Missy was narrowed for me to maybe three players, you know, so the big question started to bubble to the surface. Who is Missy?
Who are you?
Oh, you know who I am. I'm Missy.
Who's Missy?
Please try to keep up.
And of course, that moment comes towards the end of the episode, and of course, just after that audio cuts out, it's revealed that Missy is the Master. So at last we knew. But, you know, it was kind of easy to guess. Indeed, if we go back to the Who Wars tapes from a month ago, I did a segment on Who is Missy, and the three potential Time Lord candidates all got a mention. But as you'll see, because I'm going to play the tape here, one in particular had me interested all the way through. Have a quick listen to this. Alright then, so as any self-respecting Doctor Who fan at present watching Series 8 knows, we have this mysterious character called Missy. Now, I guess the strongest of these rumours is that Missy is a female version of the Master. Now, what are the reasons for this? Well, if the Master was female, I guess he'd be the Mistress, and Missy could be short for Mistress. Also, we last saw the Master in 2010. That's 4 years without one of the Doctor's, you know, greatest adversaries over the 50 years that the show's been going. He first popped up in the Pertwee era and met every other Doctor since. And it's time for a comeback. So could Missy be a female Master? I think so. I think that's entirely possible. But what else are people saying about Missy? Well, others are saying that she's a possible version of Clara. Another rumour going around is that Missy is the TARDIS. Then there's the rumour that Missy is an alternate version of River Song. Again, it's very far-fetched. So far out of these rumours we've had so far, the Master rumour seems to be the strongest to me. Then there's the rumour that Missy could be the Rani. Or what about Romana? Almost as strong as the Master rumour, but still nothing's beating that for me so far. And then probably the final big rumour that's going around is that Missy is God, or what someone's interpretation of God might be, or possibly she is death. Who do you think Missy is? So yes, I was firmly on the side of Missy being the Mistress way back then. I don't pretend to be Nostradamus. Again, it was just very easy to guess. And it's kind of interesting, actually. Moffat does, I guess, two kinds of brain teasers. One is the kind of brain teaser that's so bonkers, it really has no answer at all. And even when he tries to answer it in the end, no one tends to believe it because he's made it such a big, incredible brain teaser that no explanation kind of really satisfies people. I mean, a good example is the exploding TARDIS, you know, and in Matt Smith's first season, he grabs that piece of the TARDIS, so we think, oh, the TARDIS somewhere in time, somewhere else, has exploded, and he's got a piece of it. And in the end, the explanation wasn't that great, and people really weren't into it. So that's one kind of Moffat brain teaser. The other kind is, I guess, this kind, the kind that is very easy to guess, and in some ways isn't much of a brain teaser at all. Of course, Who is Missy had people guessing, but I think most people, no matter what flights of fancy they had, like, oh, it could be River Song, or oh, it might be Romana, I think everyone at the back of their mind had, you know, it's probably the Master as, you know, their number one choice or their fallback option. And in the end, it was the Master. So as for the Master having regenerated into a female form, it's kind of funny. This is what should be a major event in some ways, and yet I think fandom's just accepting it pretty normally. It's like, okay, I think there's this sense that, of course, Time Lords can change sex. We've had that established in an earlier episode in the post-2005 series. And here we see the Master become female. And some will say it's a stepping stone to the Doctor doing it one day. It's softening the blow for those who don't think it's possible. And I even put that comment to someone on Twitter the other day. They didn't quite agree with me, and they didn't think Missy was going to be the Master at all, and all sorts of stuff. It's a whole other conversation to get into. But I do think that's certainly the case. Certainly it's there if future showrunners want to do it, to have established that the Master's done it before. Well, why can't the Doctor do it one day? It's possible, but will it actually happen? That's the rub. That's another thing. I don't think I'd mind either way, but I'm not too sure I see it happening in the near future. I know that might disappoint some people to hear, but I just get this vibe that the Doctor may be kept as an exclusively male hero. Some people say that's great. Some people say he's one of the rare positive role models for, you know, boys and young men, and, you know, to make him female will take that away. And then there'll be one less positive role model for young boys and men out there. I understand that point of view. I understand the point of view that some would like to see the variety of a female Doctor too. So it can happen, but will it happen? Interesting. But getting back to the Master doing it specifically, it's kind of interesting to ponder, how did this happen? Not so much how did they change sex, because obviously they can change sex probably at will, but where has the Master come from? Isn't the Master time-locked with Gallifrey? Where was the Master? How did the Master come to be here? You know, I'm not sure if those questions will get answered. I'm not sure if at the end of the second episode, you know, the Master might not be vanquished and we think he, well, I say he and I say Master, I should be saying Mistress and she, shouldn't I? We ponder whether the Mistress will be defeated. Will the Mistress be vanquished and we think she's dead? Or will she come back? Will we learn how she got here? Will we learn where she goes? Will Michelle Gomez come back and do some more episodes as the Mistress? That's an interesting thought, you know, and not have to have this huge build-up across a whole series, but, you know, wham, straight into an episode, the Doctor and the Mistress meet up, and it's on like Donkey Kong. You know, that would be really interesting. I'd like to see that, but I guess it depends on how the Mistress character is left at the end of this next episode. That's something to ponder. So all told, like I said, it's an interesting sort of thing in Who fandom at the moment. Something fairly monumental has just happened. The Master has changed sex. But I think it might be indicative of the progressiveness of a lot of the Who audience, that people are like, oh yeah, okay, cool. You know, let's get on with it. It's not the big deal that some thought it might be, and that many probably thought it might have been 10 years ago. Or certainly back in the classic era of the show, I don't think it would have ever happened there. And maybe this will point the way to how people would react to a female Doctor. Of course it would get, you know, headlines and so on. It's been a hot topic since Tom Baker threw it out there as a joke originally. I think it was at his farewell press conference that he wished the next Doctor luck, whoever he or she is, which of course sent, you know, Fleet Street into spasms of, you know, verbosity and coming to all these conclusions. He said it as a joke then, but I think it's something that would be quite acceptable now for the majority of the fan base. I think the way they've reacted to the Master slash Mistress here is proof of that. I know I'm rambling, but I'm sort of forming my thoughts as I work this through. I think it could point the way to the BBC seeing that it is possible, but it will still be a very brave man or woman who pulls the trigger on that idea when the rubber hits the road in the future sometime. So, thinking about the theme of heaven or the afterlife, the nethersphere, I think it was always going to be the case that it would never be explained as heaven per se. But, you know, here we have technology capturing people at the point of death. And it's not really heaven at all. I don't think they were going to anger religious types out there by pretending they were telling everyone what heaven, the afterlife, whatever, hell it was referred to at one time, when the Doctor said to Clara, go to hell. That was a funny line too. I don't think it was ever going to be on the cards that it would really try and explain the reality of heaven, or what heaven is for some people. Certainly there are a lot of atheists in the audience who are probably just rolling their eyes at the whole thing. But that's good. I think Doctor Who always leaves its options open when it comes to talking about gods or goddesses or heaven or hell or whatever it might be. I think of the Satan pit, you know, just off the top of my head in particular. Anyway, what else did I think about this episode? I think the episode was quite slow in some ways. Very slow and very deliberate. But by that, I'm not trying to say that it was boring. It certainly wasn't a boring episode. We got some reveals. It was very interesting. I liked the concept of the Dark Water, the way it could hide anything that's not organic, and thus hiding the cyber suits that were surrounding those skeletons. Very, very interesting stuff. And it does make me think that episode 2 will be action-packed. And I think this is the way two-parters should be. When I think of some of the ones that haven't worked for me, like, say, The Rebel Flesh back in Matt Smith's era, a lot seemed to happen in the first episode. It was like the writer was going out of their way to say, now, this is happening, and this is happening, and that's happening, and, oh, look at all this stuff happening. And then by the time they get to the second episode, it's like, oh, I don't really have a lot to say, and they kind of drag along. I think this is probably the better way to do it, to do some nice, slow, deliberate storytelling, let it just play out, and then amp it up in the second episode. So I think, heading into next week's episode, we're going to have a hell of a good episode. I mean, we've all seen the trailers. We've seen the Doctor getting on a plane. He seems to be on it with UNIT. I think it's Oswin who's sucking on a Ventolin for her asthma. And wow, you know, if there's a fight with the Cybermen, the Doctor seems to fall out of the plane at some point. It's all going to be happening next week. Will it end with Clara leaving the show? Well, I still don't know. They talk about Clara being in the Christmas episode. Maybe that's where she leaves the show. But who knows? There might be a twist. I've seen people on online forums suggesting maybe it's a surprise regeneration. Maybe Capaldi's leaving. I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think, as a major fan of the show, Capaldi would have agreed to sign up for just 1 year of being the Doctor. Also, we've heard that he's filming the Christmas episode, and I think there's even been footage of it to some degree. So we know he does get past this next episode. But will Clara? And given that Danny Pink is dead, and it seems to be well established that he is dead, he was hit by that car, his physical body did die, it was his essence or whatever that was sucked up into that Time Lord device to send him to the Nethersphere. Will Danny stay dead? Will Clara perhaps join him in the afterlife? That might be a nice way for them to go out, you know? It means Clara dies, which is terrible on some levels, but it might be a fitting ending for her, and it reunites her with Danny in some sort of afterlife. Where's it all going to go? I really, really don't know. And that's the great thing about this. I haven't been spoiled. I don't think many people out there can spoil us at the moment. Certainly some people will see preview tapes, but even preview tapes have scenes cut out. And I'm really, really looking forward to next week. This was solid Doctor Who. I'm not going to go crazy and say 10 out of 10 Doctor Who, but, you know, it's a good 8 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10. It's a great episode, great storytelling, and it's all leading somewhere. So I'm more than happy with this. To people out there who are unhappy, I'd like to hear why. Write into me either way, whether you liked it or not. Email, Facebook, tweet me, whatever you like. We'll read out some of your comments on the next show. And gosh, when we get to the next show, we'll have seen the next episode of Doctor Who. We'll have seen the finale. Isn't that amazing? Time has gone so quick, and this season has been so good. Certainly a step up from season 7. I can say that with no reservations, and certainly better than large chunks of series 5 and 6 as well. And by no means is that disrespect to Matt Smith. I think Matt Smith was a fantastic Doctor. I just don't think he always had great stories. Here, I think the majority of the stories have been quite good, quite interesting, and even those that weren't still had a vibe that was a bit darker, a bit more adult, a bit more, you know, what I would call Doctor Who, what Doctor Who is for me. And I know what Doctor Who is for me isn't what is Doctor Who for everyone else, but it's swings and roundabouts. Sometimes you get a series or two that's not to your taste, sometimes you get one that is. For me at the moment, this is Doctor Who, how I like it. So, good stuff. Again, what did you think? Let me know, and we'll include it on the next show.
Hi, it's me, Kate. I'm back again this week for another review. I've decided to take a break from the Doctor Who audiobooks, for a little while anyway, and to give you a Star Wars Legend review this time. So this is exciting because the only other Star Wars books that I've read in their entirety are J.J. Miller's Kenobi and A New Dawn. And I plan on reading more of the EU, the Legends, as many as possible, because I know that there are a lot of great stories in there. And I also want to be able to spot references in the movies or TV shows, you know, that they have chosen from the Star Wars Legends. And I also just want to expand my fandom. So I'll be reviewing the book The Crystal Star by Vonda Ann McIntyre. This book has got some awesome cover art. It's got Luke right there front and center. And although I don't necessarily agree with that, because I don't feel like Luke was the focal point of the story, but anyway, we'll get to more of that later. You know, it's got Leia, Han, Chewie. It's got the crystal star thing in the background. It's got the bad guy, Hethrier, I believe, in silhouette of him. And then if you turn around on the back side, you got the Millennium Falcon. So it's always good to see the Millennium Falcon. Now, I decided to stick with the audiobook tradition, and so I went ahead and got the audiobook version of this, in addition to the actual hard copy. The audiobook version is read by Anthony Held, and I didn't realize it at first, but the audio version actually is an abridged version of the book. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So what is this book about? Well, there's a pretty good description on the back cover, so let me just read that for you. The Crystal Star. Princess Leia's children have been kidnapped. Along with Chewbacca and R2-D2, she follows the kidnapper's trail to a disabled refugee ship, from which the children are also missing. Here she learns of a powerful Imperial officer with a twisted plan to restore the Empire. Meanwhile, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker are cut off from Leia by the death of a nearby star, which has caused a disruption in the Force. They have gone to the planet Cressia to investigate a report of a lost group of Jedi. Instead, they find a charismatic alien named Waru, whose miraculous healing powers have attracted a fanatic following. As Leia follows the path of her children across space, Luke and Han draw closer to the truth behind Waru's sinister cult. Together, they will face an explosive showdown that will decide the survival of the New Republic and the universe itself. So, let's get into that. What did I think about this book? Well, it was weird. Weird's a really good word for this. And I don't really mean the good kind of weird. And some parts of it were just so weird that it actually made me laugh. And I don't think that was what the author intended. So, just to get into a few of the specific weird things in this book. You know, we're not really used to seeing young kids in the Star Wars universe. The kids are supposed to be 3 years old and 5 years old in this. And it was funny because the very first line in this book, let me read it for you. The children had been kidnapped. So from what I know from the Star Wars Legends, that's kind of a common thing I've heard that, you know, the children are constantly being kidnapped. And so I just thought that was kind of humorous to start the book off in that way. But yeah, so the kids, you know, for being 3 and 5 years old, they acted kind of older than they probably should have in reality. The Waru, that was kind of a strange villain. It's a blob with scales, and it really seemed more like something you would see out of Star Trek, not Star Wars. And the same goes for the Crystal Star, you know, that the book is named after. And that's not to say that's a bad thing, obviously. I'm a Trekkie, but it was weird. Now, the characters, Luke and Han especially, they seemed a little bit wooden and uncharacteristic. And also Leia, she mentions in there how she's basically for 10 years been avoiding her Jedi training so she can learn how to be a better pilot. I don't know. I didn't really like that. I think Leia would want to become a Jedi. And then, what's a werewolf? I kept hearing about this werewolf, and I was like, a werewolf? What is that? And it was really confusing, and it does kind of get explained towards the end of it, but it's still kind of confusing. And I had to look it up on Wikipedia, and just in case you're wondering, it's this dog-like creature that metamorphosizes into the adult alien. So, yeah. Interesting stuff there. So, was there anything I liked about this book? Well, I thought that the most interesting part of this book was actually a subplot, and the subplot about Hethrir, who is the bad guy who kidnapped the children, and his former lover, Rilau, and they were apparently students of Darth Vader, and they were both Force-sensitive, and so Darth Vader was hoping that their offspring would create a powerful little Force-wielder, but the child Tigress actually didn't have any Force abilities. So that got me thinking about what Darth Vader said on Rebels about the children of the Force, and I'm really interested to see what direction they take that. Are we going to find out, like, is the Force directly creating these children? And, like, when two Force-sensitive people have a child, does the Force cancel itself out? I don't know. I hope we find out some more answers to that, though. It's kind of intriguing stuff. So, overall, I get the impression that maybe this isn't the best that Star Wars Legends has to offer. On Amazon, the reviews for this novel are brutal. There are several one-star reviews. And although I thought that this book did have its faults, I didn't think it was that bad. And it actually was very entertaining. So for the book itself, I'm going to go ahead and give this one 5 lightsabers out of 10. And then the audiobook, even though it was truncated and parts of it were cut out, I think maybe those parts, it was a little too detailed in the book maybe, and so it helped the audiobook version. And so, yeah, the audiobook version was just very entertaining. It's got the Star Wars music that always makes us happy, and then you hear the sound effects like Chewbacca and R2-D2 and the ship noises. And the narrator on this one, he is really good. I hope to hear more from him. So the audiobook version, I'm going to go ahead and give that 7 lightsabers out of 10. All right, so I've taken my first step into a larger world of Star Wars Legends. I'm not sure what I'll do for the next review. Maybe I'll start from the beginning, or maybe if you guys have a good suggestion for me, you can let me know. So, yeah, that's it for this week. Until we meet again, allons-y, and may the Force be with you.
This is M.A. Timber reminding you that for free, full episodes of Doctor Who Dark Journey, news, cast info, and much more, visit us online at amaudiomedia.com.
Cool beans!
So here we are at the end of the 13th Who Wars. That felt like quite a quick canter through the week compared to some of our more recent episodes, but that's okay. I don't mind doing a quick episode now and then and a longer episode here and there. I think it breaks things up nicely, and if we have more to say some weeks than others, then that's cool. I want to thank Kate and Lex and Leo for their time and contributing to the show, and I also want to thank you for listening. You know, I was talking about podcasts at the start of the episode and how people might listen to them the day they go out or a week later or a year later. But whenever you listen to this, you've taken the time to actually listen to the thoughts of, you know, me, just this guy sitting in his studio here in Sydney, and Lex over there in New York, and Kate in Arizona, and my wife who's just down the hallway from me. And I sometimes sit back and think, wow, you actually listened to this and you got something out of it. It's very hard sometimes. I'm probably not expressing this well at all, but it's very hard sometimes to sit here on this side of the microphone and think that anyone is out there and interested in listening. And yet you are. I see that from the stats. I see how many times our feed gets hit every week, and I see how much it's been going up lately. So I know you're out there. I know you're listening. I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love an iTunes review as well, if possible. And even if you don't give us that, I do want to say thanks for listening. Just straight out thanks for listening, because there are so many podcasts out there and so many opinions on the same topics. Doctor Who and Star Wars are two of the most popular things out there in podcast land. For you to be listening to us, it does mean a lot to me. It does mean a lot to the other contributors as well. We're flattered. We're fully flattered that you take the time to do that. All right, without getting sappy, I'll cut it off there, and I'll see you next Sunday with Who Wars number 14.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.